Imperial Leader, the life story of the foremost man of our time, Winston Churchill. Winston Churchill, after a period of enforced idleness, has been called upon once again to enter the British cabinet, this time as Minister of Munitions. Churchill's star is on the rise again, but not long after he takes office, disaster befalls the Allies on the Italian front. Lloyd George, the Prime Minister, summons Winston to No. 10 Downing Street.
I came as soon as I got your message, David. What is it?
Another misfortune. One could hardly believe it possible.
France?
No. Italy.
Bad?
Very bad. 1 million Italians are in retreat at Caporetto.
Good God.
Here are the telegrams. 200,000 men captured and 1,800 guns. It's a disaster of the greatest magnitude. I don't know what to do. Our army has been bled white at Passchendaele, and the French are only just recovering from their disaffection. But we can't leave Italy to her fate.
Why not go to Italy yourself?
Yes. Yes, I think you're right, Winston. I must go. But what can I say? What hope can I give them?
Men must be found, that's all. Puma might be given charge of that. But Italy must be rearmed. I can look after that end of it. It may not yet be too late to make a recovery. In any case, we can't afford to let Italy be completely overrun.
But our margins are so small, Winston. Our resources are not inexhaustible.
We must make the Germans think so, at any rate. Courage, David. We have surmounted the other misfortunes. Why should we be daunted now?
By heavens, you should have been at my side all the time. It takes a spirit like yours to see victory in disaster.
Mark my words. We are approaching the darkest hour before victory. But victory will come out of these disasters. I know.
October 1917. Within a short 12 months, great history is to be recorded. Within 12 short months, the weary war world is to see the first glimmering of the light of peace. In the last 12 months of agony, great epics are to take place. But meantime, the Germans, desperate to finish the war which is destroying their nation and fomenting revolution, plan a gigantic military campaign on the Western Front. It is early 1918, and the German High Command calls a secret meeting of the German Reichstag to explain this great plan.
I, Hindenburg, promise victory, complete and absolute victory, in the field before the autumn. This is the time to strike. American troops cannot land in any great numbers for many months. So, for 6 months, the Allies must fight their own battle. Now the German policy and the German sword have brought peace to the East, we can in the same way lay prostrate the West. We shall swoop down on our enemies and destroy them. A price must be paid for this victory, a terrible price. We estimate that such an offensive will cost the lives of 1.5 million men. But for a victory, that price must be paid.
The tremendous German onslaught against the Allies begins in April. Ludendorff and Hindenburg, intent on reaching the Channel ports, throw endless masses of men and armaments into the battle. In London...
Good evening, sir.
Hello, Winters. Is Mrs. Churchill home?
She's just putting Master Randolph to bed, sir. You're looking very tired yourself, sir.
Yes, I'm very tired.
Is everything going all right with the war, sir, if I may ask?
I hope so. It's a grim picture. But perhaps there's a sign of dawn. There is a sign of dawn, I know it.
It's terrible, the big German offensive, isn't it? My nephew, such a nice boy, killed. We're all very upset about it. But we've just got to stand up and take it, haven't we, sir?
Just stand up and take it. That's right, Winters.
After all, the way we look at it is this. There's the king, and a wonderful king he is, the way he encourages people in these dreadful times. And Queen Mary, they've shown a wonderful example. And so have all the others, the generals and the government. So we can't just think of our own worries at a time like this.
Winters, it's the people of England, like you and your wife, which make this land of ours what it is. Not the great lords and ladies, just the common folk of England, which make our homeland so great. My respects to Mrs. Winters, old friend, and tell her, yes, tell her there'll be good news soon despite the gloom.
Oh, thank you, sir. It's encouraging to hear you speak like that.
Hello, darling. Oh, is he asleep?
Yes, I think and I hope.
Looks very peaceful there, doesn't he? All the war about the weary old world, and he, like so many countless other children, sleeps on in peace, in trust.
Let's leave him. Mustn't talk or we'll wake him up.
Yes, all right. Everything's pretty bad.
You're not losing confidence.
No, never that. But the offensive, so terrific. So many young men's lives. Thousands of young Germans who don't want to fight, thrown into the battle. That's what we have to think about, Clementine. The new world that's to come out of all this. The new world where Randolph can live and enjoy life. Work hard, but have no longer that deadly fear of the brutal clash of armed races. We must do that for Randolph and all the Randolphs of the world. God grant that we can remake this sorry scheme of things.
How sad you seem tonight.
I'm rude. War. Mistakes. Retreats. So few victories. But the big victory will be ours. The final victory. We must never cast that away. Never.
At British Army headquarters in France,
it is clear, Sir Douglas, the enemy is turning these into a major operation. He aims for Boulogne and Kelly so as to destroy our communications and supplies.
Yes, the situation is very critical. But thank heaven reinforcements are coming. By Friday, the 3rd, 4th, 5th, 31st, 61st, and 1st Australian divisions will be in line. You'll please issue this order of the day.
Yes, sir.
To all ranks of the British forces in France. 3 weeks ago today, the enemy began his terrific attacks against us on a 50-mile front. His objects are to separate us from the French, to take the Channel ports and destroy the British Army. In spite of throwing already 106 divisions into the battle and enduring the most reckless sacrifice of human life, he has yet made little progress toward his goals. We owe this to the determined fighting and self-sacrifice of our troops. Words fail me to express the admiration which I feel for the splendid resistance offered by all ranks of our army under the most trying circumstances. Many amongst us now are tired. To those, I would say that victory will belong to the side which holds out the longest. The French army is moving rapidly and increased force to our support. There is no other course open to us but to fight it out. Every position must be held to the last man. There must be no retirement. With our backs to the wall and believing in the justice of our cause, each one of us must fight on to the end. The safety of our homes and the freedom of mankind alike depend upon the conduct of each one of us at this critical moment.
Dark days, grim days. With their backs to the wall, the Allies fight on. While in number 10 Downing Street, a group of anxious men, the British cabinet, plan, wait, hope for the ultimate counteroffensive, which must begin and must forever destroy Germany's hopes of world domination. In London, Winston Churchill, ever present at war councils, ever active, works night and day for the victory which must come out of the darkness. Winston Churchill, philosopher as much as statesman, who meditates.
The gods alone remember everlasting. They strike remorselessly and ever like for like. By their great memories, the gods are known.